Radiotopia.
You didn't hear this from me, but Normal Gossip is back for a sixth season. Join host Kelsey McKinney as she shares the juiciest gossip from the real world. Each episode, she's joined by a special guest, and you might recognize a couple this season from the Radiotopia universe. Normal Gossip, named one of the best podcasts of the year by Time Magazine and Vulture, is out now on all your favorite podcast platforms. New episodes starting April 17th.
Dear Diary.
Sixth grade.
February 14th.
1991.
I am really depressed.
How could she break up with me?
Mom, you can't read this.
Hey, y'all. I'm Bren. And when I was 8 years old, I had a lot of feelings. My friends and family thought I was stubborn and frustrating. My teachers said I talked too much and sent me to ISS, in-school suspension, about every other week. I felt misunderstood and mad at the world.
There are a lot of reasons why kids can feel like outcasts. They might be the new kid at school. Or maybe they were forced to sit alone at lunch. Or, in the case of girls like Bren,
I'm mad because people don't invite me to parties. All my friends all have parties, but they don't invite me. It's not fair. I'll name those people so far. Reagan P., Mackenzie P., Brett, Brandy S., Nikki D., Kelsey J., a couple more I can't think of at the moment.
Most kids eventually find their niche and get over feeling like a misunderstood weirdo. But what happens when you don't find that niche? For kids like Bren, it led to a lot of venting in their diaries.
Bad words. Jerk, crud, dork, damn, shit, idiot, hell, asshole, crap, fuck, butthole, shit, bitch, piss.
And when venting wasn't enough,
a few months later, I learned about alphabetizing. Ass, bitch, butthole, crap, crud, damn, dork, fuck, hell, idiot, jerk, piss, shit.
From PRX and Radiotopia, this is the Mortified Podcast. I'm Neil. Today, the diary of a misfit who desperately wanted to be understood, despite one small hurdle.
When I was a kid, a lot of times communicating felt like we were talking on walkie-talkies. Like, I was on a different radio channel. I was on channel 2, and I was sending the message out, and then I was waiting for a response, but they were on channel 3.
And as a kid, Bren never fully understood why she wasn't picking up on other people's signals. It wasn't until she was all grown up that things finally started to make sense.
I think I didn't realize the cause of a lot of those miscommunications and frustrations that I had as a kid until I was in my mid-20s. I was in therapy, and a lot of the topic of conversation was my relationships with other people. A lot of it came down to miscommunications. So after kind of picking that apart with my therapist and then speaking with my parents, and my mom actually threw it out that I might be autistic. 5 or 10 years ago, I most likely would have been diagnosed with sensory processing disorder and Asperger's. Being able to say up front, hey, I have this thing, it's definitely eons away from what it was when I was a child, and I don't feel misunderstood, and I don't feel lonely anymore.
Bren has come a long way from her childhood, but we still wanted to understand why she was so willing to share her old journals in a comedy show. Would it feel like people were laughing at that kid, or worse?
We're not laughing at autism. Autism isn't necessarily a tangible thing. We're laughing with people who have had experiences. I don't think it matters if you have autism or if you're popular or if you're not. I think every child at some point felt misunderstood and felt lonely. Everyone goes through it. Even in hindsight, it makes me know that I wasn't alone in those moments. Other people were experiencing them as well.
Here's Bren on stage at Mortified in Austin.
October 5th, 1993. I hate Miss Schutzenberger. She is mean and unfair. This week I got 5 signs. So signs were letters from the teacher sent home to your parents that they had to sign and then send back. I didn't do anything. Now I don't get donuts. April 30th. My parents are mean. I started crying because I didn't want to eat out, and they said I could go or stay home and not eat dinner and go straight to bed. And while I was choosing, they said, fine, you're staying home. They're really mean. I don't think they like me anymore. September 1st. I'm always biting my nails. I can't help it. I don't know what to do. I wrote a note to a problems hotline. I hope they help me. Or God does. October 21st. Today was book character day. I was Neil Armstrong. My mom and my dad and I made a spaceship last week. So this thing was huge. It went down to my ankles and I could only waddle in it. This morning, my mom got mad and made me start crying because it wouldn't fit in the car. We were late for school, and during the parade, this boy named Steven was behind me. He tripped me and told all these kids I was a mailbox. I'm miserable because of today. As Valentine's Day approached, I still felt like I didn't have anyone to talk to. So I took matters into my own hands. January 28th. I like a boy named Michael J, and I think he likes me too, because he sent me an early Valentine's Day card. There's also a boy named Kevin who did the same, but he moved. Here are the Valentines. Happy Valentine's Day to someone fun to pal around with. To Bren from Michael, with a little heart. To Bren from Kevin Hornsby. It's a little picture of an eye like you. P.S. I'm moving. This was a lie. I wrote those Valentines to myself. From completely made up people. I added that Kevin was moving just in case anyone got suspicious.
I slipped the Valentines that I had written to myself into my box and shuffled them in with the real ones and read them out to my friends as if they were from real people. And one of them's from a boy named Michael, and there were so many Michaels, and I just added a last initial. So I don't even think any of the Michaels at my school had that initial. And then the other one I gave an actual last name to, and I have since Googled and searched on Facebook and looked through my yearbooks, and that kid did not exist. So I made up that name completely. I also was very insistent and stubborn as a kid, so I probably just kept insisting that he did exist and that he did give me the Valentine card until they got tired of pushing it and dropped it.
I still didn't feel like I had anyone. But when I was 12, I found a videotape that changed everything. June 4th. I watched a TV movie about a premature baby that we have on tape. Her name was Emily. She was doing fine and was going to go home in 8 weeks when all of a sudden she developed an intestinal infection and she died. It was very sad and touching. I love you, Emily. Somehow, I felt like baby Emily could handle all of my feelings. I just knew she would love me and listen to all my problems without judgment. I wrote this on the inside cover of a new diary. My name isn't Diary, it's Emily. This diary is dedicated to a premature baby that died. I write to her. Her name is Emily. September 1st. Hey, Emily, guess what? Baptized today. water was freezing, but it was fun. September 21st. Hi, Emily. What you doing in heaven today? I just got back from camp. It was very fun. But a lot of people there were mean. You're lucky all the people love you and are nice to you. I love you, Emily. Finding Emily's movie started an obsession with sad TV movies about dead children. I loved each of those children like they were my own family. I became the Roger Ebert of Lifetime movies about dead children.
When I was growing up, we had one TV, and to keep my sister and I from fighting over what we were going to watch, my mom had us go through the TV guide and circle or highlight the things that we wanted to watch that week. And my mom noticed that I was picking, and it was mostly Days of Our Lives, the Sunday night movie of the week, or Lifetime movies. And they were mostly about children that were kidnapped or had cancer or died some horrific way. And so then she started saying, oh, a Bren movie is on Tuesday. We should watch that. And my mom would actually record these movies for us, and I would watch the tapes over and over again. I've probably watched Born Too Soon 75 to 100 times.
I admit it. I wanted a healthy baby. I don't want to watch a child of mine live her life on the line. But I love Emily, and I'll do whatever I can to help her.
Then where are you?
I can't sit there and watch like you do.
I don't know that my parents saw anything weird or disturbing about the fact that I liked these movies. I think it was just kind of matter of fact. My sister liked to play with Barbies. The neighbor, you know, likes to play with dinosaurs, and Bren likes to watch movies about dead babies.
August 4th. Hi, Emily. Mom and I watched this thing on the news called Why, Steven? It was about a little boy who died from brain cancer. September 7th. Hi, Emily. Have you seen Princess Diana? She died on Saturday. December 25th. Merry Christmas, Emily. We went to see Titanic. It was really good and sad. So we had the VHS version of Titanic that came on two tapes. The first tape is the first 2 hours of the movie. The second tape is the last 30 minutes. I would just watch the second tape because that's when everyone dies. April 26th. Hello, Emily. Tomorrow and Wednesday I have ISS. I just got done watching a movie called Nicholas's Gift. It was about a boy that was shot in Italy, and he donated his organs to Italians. Over time, all the dead babies from TV became like family to me. May 26th. Hi, Emily and Nicholas. I just got done watching Baby Girl Scott. It was about a baby named Katie who died. Maybe you know her. May 30th. Hello, Emily, Nicholas, and Katie. I just finished watching Days of Our Lives, and Billy had her baby too soon. And it died. She named the baby Georgia, and she buried it in New Orleans by a bayou because she was down there. Love you guys. June 2nd. Hello, my beautiful angels. Georgia, I just got done watching Days of Our Lives. Your mom lied to your dad about how you died and blamed it all on hope. Take care. June 17th, 1999. Hey, Emily, Nicholas, Katie, and Georgia. I just watched the movie A Dozen Babies about the Dilly Babies. Today I got my period. Ugh, if only y'all knew. Eventually, I found some living friends and also an amazing fiance who would listen to me. And I stopped writing to dead babies. But I never lost my love of melodrama. Years later, I moved to Hollywood, where I made a career working with soap stars. My mom still tapes Lifetime movies for me. And when I visit her, we watch them together.
That was Bren reading aloud her childhood writings with no embellishing, no exaggerating, just God-given awkwardness. Now, we caught up with Bren afterwards in our postmortem fight. And we just had to know, why did she feel so compelled to write to dead children in her diary?
I think I liked writing to Emily because, in my mind, she was still a baby and she was too young to have any judgment. In my mind, I guess she was angelic and pure and untainted. It was all new experiences to her because she had missed out on her entire life. So I was kind of laying out my life so that she could see what hers could have been like, maybe, or in other instances, like, look what you dodged.
But writing to Emily and her other friends wasn't always enough.
I did find some drawings that I had made of the dead babies. Some of them as I thought them to be when they died, but then also some of what they would have been like when they were the age that I was. I think it was just, I was drawing my friends and family and guessing at what we might look like when we were older. And these dead children that I was writing to on almost a daily basis were in my consciousness. So I drew them as well.
While Bren was growing closer to her movie, The Week Friends, she was also trying her best to make deeper connections in real life, but that proved more challenging.
As a kid, I had a really hard time picking up on other people's emotions and different inflections in their communication. I had a sixth sense as a kid, though, about people who were lying. I could always pick out the person who was ingenuine, but beyond that, I couldn't tell if someone was a little off because they were sad. I couldn't necessarily pick up on those subtleties.
Though she had no idea why she couldn't pick up on subtleties, Bren remained determined to connect. And that determination helped her develop a set of sleuthing skills that would have made Encyclopedia Brown jealous.
I've had people in my life tell me that I should have been a private investigator because I can't help but pick up all the context clues. And I also like to tell people, don't lie to me, because I'll know, because I can read your body language and I remember specific details. So that probably has come from a lifetime of having to scan the room and read people. And I almost liken it to one of those first player video games where you set your scope on a certain character and it has like the breakdown of like who that person is and where they're from and what arsenal they have on hand. And it's similar to that. I have to scan every situation and every person and be reading and paying attention to all the different things that are happening.
But trying to pick up on everyone's subtleties all day long can be exhausting. And it's the main reason why Bren loved the big emotions in TV melodrama.
You knew that the child who was being kidnapped was scared. You knew that the person kidnapping them was scary. You knew that their mom was crying because they were gone. You knew the child who was dying was in pain because they were writhing around in their hospital bed. It was very direct what people were feeling. There wasn't really any subtlety or mincing of what any of the characters were experiencing.
I'm afraid what we found out from the surgery couldn't be much worse. Emily's entire intestinal tract is wrecked with necrosis. There is nothing we can do.
I don't understand. She's active. She's growing. How could she be so sick?
I don't know. She shouldn't have responded that well. It's a million in one case. She shouldn't have accepted the feeding. She shouldn't have gained the weight.
She shouldn't be dying. But she is. You gave us hope. You let us think that she would live.
This isn't what we expected.
That's not good enough.
I think it was comforting because it was a break from my everyday life. I didn't have to look for body cues. It was all laid out for me. So it was therapeutic in a way.
For Bren, Lifetime movies weren't just a source of comfort.
I think they also were a way that I could express my emotions in a safe way. So if I was watching a movie that was sad and someone was dying, I was able to cry about the fact that at school my friend had hurt my feelings, but I hadn't been able to express that at the time. And so it was a way that I could release those feelings. And a lot of times those feelings of sadness and frustration and feeling misunderstood boiled over into anger. And so if I was able to cry, then I could eliminate them and not have to have them festering inside me any longer.
To this day, Bren still finds comfort in watching melodrama. But we wondered, did she ever stop writing to the characters in these shows?
I was 7 or 8 when I started writing to Emily, and I wrote to her consistently until I was around 12. I want to say the last entry was probably when I was 18 or 19. I stopped writing to dead children that I didn't know when real people in my life died. One of the family members that I still write to fairly frequently is my grandma. I could talk about anything with her. She had similar humor to me, and now that she's gone, I still find myself thinking, oh, I have to tell her about this thing that happened, or I read this book that she would like, and so I still want to share those things with her, so now I just write her letters, and she never got to meet my wife, so, you know, it's, hey, there's this person in my life, and you would really like her, and she tried making pierogies, and they weren't great, but she's getting there.
Finally, if Bren were to write one more time to Emily, now as an adult, what would she want to share?
The biggest topic would be, hey, Emily, do you get podcasts up there? Because you're going to be the subject of one. Little did you know when I started writing to you 25 years ago that you would still be as relevant today as you were then when I watched your movie and was so deeply affected by it that it's still part of my life 25 years later.
Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and you'll see some of Bren's childhood drawings of baby Emily and other fictional kids she wrote to. You won't want to miss it. Also visit GetMortified.com to learn about Mortified stage shows, books, films, and beyond. Click participate, and who knows, maybe you'll appear on a future episode of this series. The Mortified Podcast is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, which is made possible with support from the Knight Foundation. And thanks to AdZert for providing their ad-serving platform to Radiotopia. And if your company would like to support our podcast, email sponsor@radiotopia.fm. Our podcast production team for this episode includes Hadley Dion, Michelle Dahlenberg, Dave Nielberg, and myself, Neil Katcher. Music by Gordon Bash, Alex Burke, Adam Smith, The Angel, Zoe Rose Paldino, and Snake Snake Snakes. Big thanks to Lance Roberts Studios and all the dedicated Mortified Live producers whose work make the stage show possible. Until next time, we remind you that we are freaks, we are fragile, and we all survived. Unless, of course, we were playing a kid in a Lifetime movie, because then you're gonna die.
We all wanted her to live.